Everyone, you're listening to Tech Traction. We are your hosts, Shreya and Vishnu. Joining us today is Dr. Jonathan Kipnis. Success is that serendipitous luck that needs a prepared mind, were the words of our speaker in one of his interviews earlier. Dr. Kipnis is a neuroscientist whose 2014 discovery of meningeal lymphatic vessels uncovered an unexpected mechanism by which the immune system influences brain function. The groundbreaking discovery transformed the perception of the treatment of neurological diseases. So he's currently a BJC investigator and a professor of pathology and immunology at Washington University in St. Louis. His research group aims to design new drugs that target the immune system for the benefit of cognitive and mental disorders. He is also the recipient of the prestigious NIH Director's Pioneer Award in the year 2018. Welcome, Dr. Kipnis.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Okay, so let's get started with our first question then. Can you tell us about your research on the central nervous system injury and neurodegenerative diseases?
Yes. So what we do is we are looking at the interaction of two maybe most complex systems in our body, the immune system and the brain and the central nervous system. Two systems which we live to live separately and not interact very much, only in pathologies. We now, of course, understand through works of many, many labs that the two systems are actually communicating quite a lot in physiology. And the function of one is very much dependent on the well functioning of the other. So, you know, it's very hard to get to the brain to fix neurons, to even deliver the drugs, right? Because we have all these mechanisms that prevent things from getting into the brain. So the question is, can we harness the immune system and its internal killing powers to maybe for the benefit of brain, right? This approach has not really been tried yet. Okay. We've tried many other things in different neurological disorders. They, so far, most of them have been not very successful. We have good examples of multiple sclerosis when we have 13 FDA-approved drugs, but all of them are targeting the immune system. So the question is, are there aspects, for example, of immune aspects in Alzheimer's, which we could develop, which we could identify and then target, develop and target drugs? So develop drugs and then target them towards the immune system. And I think there is a wonderful research from many, many labs today that that actually suggests that this may be a very promising avenue. And I know that people are now that are working in Parkinson's are looking at what's happening in Alzheimer's and also trying to look at the immune system there. And you know, many other diseases, right? So I think it's very promising and very exciting. And maybe even if, like, maybe 7 years ago, if you would say, when I was saying that I'm a neuroimmunologist, it wasn't really well, all that people were not all that neuro, what? So you are neither immunologist nor neuroscientist kind of thing. And I think today our field is becoming a very, very popular one. So it's yeah. Really fantastic when I have students approaching us and when I say that I want to study neuroimmunology. So it's great.
Yes. So in case there's an optic nerve damage, so do you think that can make a person potentially go blind because of CNS injuries if we have the optic nerve damaged? So is it like very much prominent, like he will go blind? Is that the case?
Well, I think it depends on the damage, right? I think in humans, I forgot the number, but I think there is a particular percent of retinal ganglion cells. Those are the neurons in the retina which actually transmit the signal of the eventual light back to the brain. So those cells, I think, if you lose below, I think if you still have about 10 or 15%, then you will see at least shadows. And then if it goes below that, then yes, you become fully blind. And it depends on the severity of the optic nerve.
Yeah, it does. Sure. So I have a very informal question for you. So according to Google, a few symptoms of cranial nerve damage include changes in taste and difficulty in swallowing. So have you had people coming to you claiming to have serious disorders based on Google searches?
So remember, I am not a medical doctor, right? So I'm not an MD, I'm a PhD. Yes, I am actually getting very often emails from patients, and they always tell personal story, and they always, it's very, It's great because A, I know that these people read, you know, they read internet, they were doing their own search because they probably can't get answers from their physicians, etc. They're reaching out to me for help. Unfortunately, you know, I always respond. I never ignore emails from patients. Unfortunately, I can't tell them much beyond that, you know, we are basic scientists trying to understand the mechanisms, and I really hope that one day these discoveries will make to clinic. But one of the beauty of the reason we just moved a couple of days ago to WashU, and I think one of the reasons we moved is because it has such a strong clinician scientist establishment at WashU. So there is every clinician is also a scientist, and every scientist, if not a clinician, then collaborative clinicians. Yes. And so I really believe that what we could do here is we can maybe translate our basic findings into some, at least give them more clinical relevance. So that's the hope.
Okay. So let's talk about the immune system now. Which mental diseases can be induced and aggravated by the immune system?
So immune system is our healing system, right? I mean, it's there to protect us. Evolutionarily, probably started as a protection from external pathogens. And probably became also a healing system of the body. So if maybe 20 years ago, even maybe 10 years ago, the majority of research was focused on how immune system targets pathogens. Mm-hmm. But I think about 20 years ago, it started with tumors, right? The immune system, immune therapy against tumors, which today is, of course, one of the most promising avenues for cancer therapy. And we understand that the immune system also responds to wounds, to wound healing, and actually mimics wound healing. So it's a healing system, right? But this healing system can also go wrong, right? It could go completely. Maybe there is like no way to stop it, or maybe there is overactivation. And in those cases, you probably can get a disease, which is not, you know, so the immune system said, okay, I want to kill that patient with MS. No, but things probably somehow went wrong. Mm-hmm. And then immune system targets its own cells of its own host, right?
So you mean like something like AIDS, where the immune system, the autoimmune disorders, something like that?
Yes. So I'll give you two examples. One is multiple sclerosis, and the other one, for example, speaking of the eyes, uveitis. And there is a beautiful paper, a beautiful story by Rachel Caspi at the NIH. And what Rachel showed is very, 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 very elegant story where she shows that immune cells, T cells, in the gut, respond to a particular, in the gut, but also I think on the eye, respond to a particular pathogen. And this a bacteria, right? And so this bacteria activates those T cells, and now they can cross-recognize targets in the eye. And so these cells, you know, by serendipity are now becoming autoimmune T cells, but the initial purpose of them was to target the pathogen. So So this is one example. Another example in MS. In MS, we don't know really what activates those cells, but really these cells are going there and targeting a myelin and actually killing the myelin. So there are a bunch of examples where immune cells are the bad guys. But I don't think in diseases like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, the disease is mediated by overactivation of immune system. I think in those diseases, you have maybe dysfunctional immunity and you want to activate and maybe, you know, activation, but also maybe switching it towards a better and more protective phenotype, right? I mean, that's the thinking.
As a matter of fact, I was going to explore immunology as a biotechnology branch, and now it sounds a lot more interesting to me, thanks to you.
I think it's a fun, I mean, think of tumors, right? I mean, have the example of tumors. This is a beautiful book I was just reading. There is this book. I don't know if you guys know this book, A Cure Within.
Okay.
It actually discusses by Neil Canavan. It discusses actually, you know, maybe 10, 15 scientists, the pioneers of cancer immunotherapy. And 20 years ago, or maybe 25 years ago, Well, it was a laughable idea, right? That you can target cancer with the immune system. And today, I think, well, I don't think today people are laughing about immune targeting for neurological disorders, but 5 years ago, it was a laughable idea. So I think things are changing. And yeah, I believe that this could be a very cool biotechnology target to start looking at.
Yes. Okay. Vishnu?
Okay. Thank you, sir. That was really interesting, and I'm sure I'll be giving that book a read as well. So our next question is about a famous action comedy thriller, which is Johnny English Reborn. I'm not sure whether you watched the movie. This movie actually involves the use of a mind control drug in an assassination plot. The drug makes the victim do anything they're asked to do. So what are your views on drugs like this? Do you think that such a thing would be possible in the future, or like, does something like this already exist?
Well, I don't know about drugs that will target your brain and direct your change your behavior, but I will tell you maybe example from our own research. We have now two papers. One is accepted and one is hopefully in a way, which shows two different immune molecules, cytokines, and actually they both are affecting different types of behavior. We published actually in 2016. We published a paper where we showed that immune molecule called interferon gamma can affect social interaction, right? So if you don't have interferon gamma, mice become asocial. We have now a beautiful story where we identified a subset of cells in the brain borders called gamma delta T cells. Mm-hmm. They produce a molecule called IL-17, which is normally produced in the gut in response to bacteria, but we find now the cells constitutively making IL-17 in the brain borders, in the meninges, and this IL-17 affects the anxiety behavior of mice, right? And so if you don't have IL-17, mice are less anxious, which is very interesting. And then the other molecule that we're actually working on, and we showed some work 10 years ago how interleukin-4 affects learning behavior, and now we have a really wonderful story where we're showing that this molecule, IL-4, doesn't affect the way mice learn, but it affects the way mice retrieve their memory, right? So if you don't have this molecule interleukin-4, mice can't retrieve their memory. So I think these are very cool examples of how immune molecule cytokines can affect different behaviors. Now, even theory, we knew exactly which circuit controls which behavior, and we knew exactly which arrays of immune molecular receptors are expressed. And in theory, yes, you might be able, by providing different, you know, mixture or a cocktail of immune molecules, you could change some behaviors. I mean, of course, this is I don't think anybody will be doing this for the purpose of controlling the mind, but the idea itself that immune system can produce molecules which change brain function, I think, is quite fascinating. And I can give you an example from something that you will relate to. You know, when you are sick, hopefully not with something which is happening terrible now in the world, but when you're sick, when you have a also coronavirus, common cold, right? Which is also coronavirus. So when you have a common cold, right? And you have a little fever, and you have, of course, a boost of all these pro-inflammatory molecules, we are usually very tired and very sleepy. And we're pretty sure that these are the immune molecules which are affecting a circuitry which controls the brain, because when your immune system is very active in fight of pathogens, probably brain, we want the brain to be, you know, to be fully, to be as low energy consumer as possible. And so you put the host in sleep. And when animal is infected, for example, with a particular bug, you do want this animal to show, to withdraw from the herd, right? So to not spread the the bug. That, of course, the interest of the host, of course, the interest of the bug is to spread as much as possible. So I think if you think of this arms race, right, between the pathogen and the immune response, but now it's happening not on the global scale, but it's actually instead happening in one particular host. So the ideas, the implications are really fascinating.
So you mean to say that if the memory cells are developed, then we can beat any diseases, something like that? Like if we have memory cells developed for chickenpox, then we don't get chickenpox again. So why doesn't that happen in case of flu? Like we should not be able to get it again, right?
Well, but flu is changing, right? So chickenpox is a more stable pathogen, and flu is changing seasonally, right? HIV changing hourly. She was just beautiful interview with the director of the NIH a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. When he kind of he says that I'm not a virologist, so I don't know much about viruses. Okay. Or bacteria, but he actually says that, for example, coronavirus seems to be stable enough, so he's very optimistic that there will be vaccine, right? Oh. But the question is something else. The question is, can we then develop a vaccine for Alzheimer's? Can we train our immune system when it's healthy and well functioning? Can we make sure that the Alzheimer's doesn't develop? That's a not 1 million. It's a $1 trillion question, right? So I don't have the answer for it. But I believe that by keeping immune system highly active and highly effective, I think we will be able to push at least the onset of Alzheimer's. And I'm always joking that my goal is not to cure Alzheimer's, but to push the onset to age of 150, 160. So okay. We'll become.
Oh, that is interesting. And so there's another doubt that I had just now. Like, you're talking about the correlation between the various enzymes which are related to the immune system and their close connection with memory and brain function. So, like, is there any such other similar like correlation between the central between the nervous system as such and the lymphatic system? Since
the lymphatic system does indeed
play an important role.
Yes, the lymphatic system is a conduit system, right? So the lymphatic system is there to do two functions, as far as we know. It's a highway for immune molecules, for immune cells to go from the tissue into the control centers, which are the lymph nodes. And so if you don't have a lymphatic vessel, then there is no way for immune cells to go from the organ to lymph nodes for reactivation, for recharge, for recognition of pathogens, recognition of self molecules. So you must have it's like a bridge, right, from tissue to the control organ. And the other thing is that they also serve as the removal of the waste from the tissue, right? So everything the tissue produces is being removed through this lymphatic vessel. So they are the disposal system of the tissue. And so what's happening normally is every tissue will have all these metabolites and all these molecules will be all removed through the lymphatic vasculature into the lymph nodes. Immune cells will traffic through the same system. They will all meet in this control center, the lymph nodes, and then the immune system will go through whatever that tissue is producing. And if everything looks good, then immune system will not do anything. But if they see that something is wrong, they will then go back to the tissue and then respond to a problem. Imagine a simple thing. Imagine a scenario where your neighbors are going through a trash, mm-hmm. through a trash can, on a daily basis for, let's say, 2 or 3 weeks. They will know everything mm-hmm. about it, right? They will know exactly what you do. That's what the immune system does. And if suddenly your trash can now will have, I don't know what, you know, bloody, some, I don't know what, bloody blood on, I don't know what, fabric, right? They will say, wait a second, what happens? So if immune system sees molecules of pathogen which are coming from the tissue, they will say, wait a second, what's happening? We need to go back and check, right? And so that is basically the interaction between the tissue and the immune system. So it's mediated fully by the lymphatic vasculature. So the idea that the brain doesn't have lymphatic vessels makes absolutely no sense. Today we realize that. Today I understand. And I never questioned this statement that there is no lymphatic connection between the brain and the immune system. I never questioned it because it was, you know, it was kind of dogma in the field, and you very rarely question dogma. But today, 5 years after the discovery, I realized that this idea was completely meaningless. And so what we should have looked for is which lymphatic vasculature, which lymphatic network services the brain, because the assumption that brain is not serviced by lymphatic vasculature, again, like I said, is completely unrealistic. So the very long answer to your short question, yes, lymphatic system is extremely important, because without a functional lymphatic system, your immune system will not be able to understand right. what's happening in the tissue.
Okay. So following up on the bloody cloth thing that you just told us, let's talk about a horror thriller movie, which is called Get Out. I don't know if you've watched it though.
I'm very bad with movies. I don't watch much movies.
So. That's all right. Yeah. So I'll just tell you what happens in it. So it involves something like a brain transplant, where one individual's brain and entire consciousness is transferred to another body. So are procedures like these possible?
Brain transplant will probably take us a while to do, but what you could do is achieve something very interesting, and I'll tell you in a second why this reminded me. What you could do is something very interesting is you could replace a resident of the brain by transplantation, and that's the microglia, the immune cells of the central nervous system. If you do irradiation of the body and you kill all the immune cells in the body, and then you give back bone marrow transplantation, then some of these immune cells, the new ones that come in, will actually go into the brain, will seed the brain, and now you will have a sick brain with healthy microglia. Mm-hmm. Microglia are the brain macrophages. And it has been shown by several labs that this could be beneficial in several diseases. There was a lab of Nobel laureate Mario Capecchi that showed that this kind of procedure is working in OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. There was a works by Serge Rivet showing the same approach was actually working in Alzheimer's disease. And we show that it's true in Rett syndrome, which is neurodevelopmental disease. There are some other labs showing similar approaches. I will tell you what, all three approaches have been completely slaughtered by people who think that they control the field, this disease. Because the idea of replacing immune cells and helping the brain, it was back then, was still extremely new and highly controversial. Right. So I am personally extremely happy now when I see there was a paper just recently came out again showing that macrophages, which are brain macrophages, so microglia or around the brain, the macrophages, which are around the brain. There's a beautiful paper showing that these cells are involved in Rett syndrome. So I hope that one day we will be able to maybe, I mean, this is a very, very serious approach, right? It's not, you know, like giving patient a drug. This is going, taking patient through whole body radiation. It's a very, very severe thing. So only as a last resort, you know, in leukemia, we're doing it, right? So I think in disease like Rett syndrome, where right now there is really, there's especially Rett syndrome in boys, which is a terminal disease, and boys are dying by the age of 2 or 3. Oh. I think that trying such approach, again, we need to first of all validate this thing in mice and then maybe in monkeys and different models. But once we find that it works, I think we should be able to try maybe it in patients which are otherwise terminal, right? We need to be very, very careful. So you cannot transplant maybe the, and so the reason your question reminded me of this is many years ago, somebody asked us to say, you know, what's our wishful thinking about Rett syndrome, and we said, until we can transplant the brain, we can transplant at least part of it, and it seems to be working in mice. So anyway, again, long answer to a simple question. I'm trying to make your questions more to scientific audience, right?
Yes, I understand.
Yeah, okay. That was really interesting. And since we have touched upon the topic of transplanting, I'd like to ask a question based on, like, it's a complication on which happens on transplanting. It's glass-host disease. This when you're transplanting the bone marrow of a host into a recipient, sometimes the immune cells of the donor might recognize the recipient as foreign cells, and like it could cause inflammation. So are there any possible remedies for this?
Well, so it's called graft versus
bone
host,
marrow,
right?
Transplants are...
Yeah, it's called graft versus host. It's a very serious condition. And so, again, I'm not a hematologist. I don't do transplants, and I'm not a physician, as I said before. In mice, it's, of course, very easy because we have identical twins, if you wish, right, that we transplant their bone marrow from, unless somebody who does the experiment has no clue how to do it, which we unfortunately experienced as well. People will try to repeat our studies and then use the wrong bone marrow in the wrong mouse and kill the mouse with a transplant. I mean, but that's you need to be stupid. So that's a whole different category of a problem. But in people, of course, I mean, I think we, as far as I understand, in clinic, you can monitor it, right? First of all, you will find your very, very best donor to make sure that you reduce graft versus host as much as possible. And then I don't really know what therapies today are available, but I think you can keep immune system in check and support and in control to prevent it from attacking the host itself. And again, you know, as I said, this is not a simple procedure. So one needs to be very careful, of course, and how they proceed with it. So it's a very, very complicated one with a bunch of side effects, and you want to make sure that this is really, you know, the last resort. And again, it works in leukemia patients, right?